the state of downtown Jacksonville is strong. Good morning, live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Melissa Ross, and we are always live at 9. Make sure to subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and watch the show, too, with video on demand at our partner, TVJax.com. Just ahead, the head of Downtown Vision, Inc. takes your calls. What are your thoughts and questions about the city's urban core? Get on the line now at 549-2937. Then later, fighting human trafficking on the First Coast, what's being done to change the system. Plus, robotics classes are expanding in the Duval County Public Schools this fall, and your child could be taking them. We'll tell you all about it, all of that ahead. But first this hour, news of growth and improvement for downtown Jacksonville. A new report is out this week looking at how the city center has thrived over the last year. Some good news when it comes to new development, retail recruitment, and changing demographics. So what's the state of downtown and the road ahead? Jake Gordon is the executive director of Downtown Vision, Inc., and he's here now with more. Jake, good to see you.
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
And to all of our advocates for the urban core and people that just have questions about the state of downtown Jacksonville, what are your thoughts? What are your comments? Get on the line right now. The number to join us, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/First Coast Connect and email and tweet us or weigh in on our Facebook page. So Downtown Vision, Inc. out with a new report this week looking at everything having to do with urban core business, workers, and residents. What have we learned over the last year?
Well, I think we've learned that, it was a great year for downtown. And, you know, Downtown Vision is the business improvement district of downtown Jacksonville. We work hard to make downtown a better place to live, work, visit, and invest. And you see that, after a long period of kind of economic uncertainty, downtown is really, really coming back. Really, one of the things that we do as Downtown Vision is put out a report every year on the state of downtown. And actually, this year, it took us much longer than usual because there was just so many things we wanted to include. It actually ends up being more like an 18-month report because we included a lot of what's happened very recently, because every day there's more news stories about investment in downtown.
There's a lot to go over. New projects that really made a splash in 2015 are the Unity Plaza in Brooklyn, along with hundreds of new apartments over there. The new Jesse Ball DuPont Center, that's the former Hayden Burns Library. Those are two that really seem to stand out.
Yeah, I mean, any one of these projects, you know, 220 Riverside with all the housing, Unity Plaza, you know, Jesse Ball DuPont Center, any one of those projects would be a big year for downtown. And actually, that's kind of just the tip of the iceberg related to all of the investment that we have. And I think that's how you know downtown is doing well, when individuals are willing to invest, when nonprofits and other organizations are willing to invest.
And
that's how we evaluate how downtown's doing.
And it's 549-2937 to talk to Downtown Vision's Jake Gordon. What are your thoughts and concerns and questions about Jacksonville's urban core? We'll go to your calls in a moment. Tweets and Facebook comments already coming in. So the good news is property values have moved upward in downtown. That is bringing in more money, more residents, more employees. That's always been the big challenge for the urban core, is just getting more retail, more rooftops, more. And of course, the saying is retail follows rooftops. How is Downtown Vision trying to deal with that problem?
Well, you know, here in Jacksonville, it's a wonderful city, and there's so many amazing neighborhoods. So on some level, we've been talking a little bit in downtown. There's just so many opportunities around, so many different places to live, so many different places to spend your money and invest. You know, we think that downtown, I've listened to Mayor Curry a little bit. He's been taken to saying, you know, you can't be a suburb to nowhere. Like, these ideas that these great cities out there are investing in their downtown. So just, there's been 15 development projects with $221 million completed since 2015. And then it's the active projects. We have 25 projects that are, you know, coming online that have $471 million, like the YMC Winston, which is going to be an amazing facility right on the water there in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
So, you know, we really do see this rise. You know, commercial occupancy is up to its highest level since 2007. You know, people ask me, what's the best way to evaluate the health of downtown? It is those people living there, working there, and filling up some of the vacancy we have. We had about a 10-year period where, since 2005, 6, and 7, you know, we went through a big economic decline. And after about a decade of kind of spinning our wheels, we're finally getting back into that. And I think you see the amount of growth that's happened in the last 18 months really overshadows like the last couple years. And so we really hope that this is a good indicator going forward.
You think you're on the right track, and the numbers seem to bear that out. What do you see as the biggest challenges as you try to execute this vision of really making a bustling city center for Jacksonville that people really want to visit and hang out in live?
Well, first, I have to say all of this is a big public-private partnership, so it all begins and ends with the city. The city of Jacksonville, I'm incredibly encouraged with the new administration under Mayor Curry. I have to say, you know, the most pressing issue facing our city today is this unfunded pension liability. You know, so we recently evaluated that and educated ourselves on the problem, and I personally am voting yes, and I encourage everyone else to. We feel that's a precursor before we're able as a city to fix these pressing issues, and then free up some funds and potentially invest somewhere, and we hope that's downtown.
What are your thoughts about downtown Jacksonville? It's your chance to connect with Downtown Vision's Jake Gordon. We'll go to the phones in a moment at 549-2937. Here's a comment for you on our First Coast Connect Facebook page. Dean, downtown has improved. However, so many projects are still unanswered. The Landing, the Shipyards, Metropolitan Park, the Laura Street Trio. Downtown will not see its full potential without a large-scale, year-round attraction. What do you think about that?
You know, it's always glass half full, half empty. I appreciate the comment from Dean. You know, we have so many amazing opportunities in just downtown Jacksonville. We saw, you know, the Chamber and ULI North Florida brought in Oklahoma City, and they did amazing whitewater rafting. When you go to Oklahoma City, like I did with Jack's Chamber, there's only really one place for that. They dug their river. Their river's only 3 feet deep. If you fall in, stand up. We have an amazing river. We have all these places. I mean, on the list of projects, Met Park is, I mean, that's an incredible project, but at the same time, with all these other opportunities, you know, we would never have enough money as a city, even if we were doing amazing, to fund them all. So priority becomes really important. I think, you know, we're looking to help the city kind of focus. I think adding more residents to downtown is really one of the big things that could change. You know, we went to Kansas City with the Chamber to look at how they did it. They have a grocery store right in the middle of downtown, a beautiful grocery store. It's basically paid for by the city to encourage all of this private development around it. And they did that. They took seven blocks. They invested $300 million. They brought in some private developers. And I think that's the way you see a city growing. I think we're still a little ways away from that. But if we focus on residential and making downtown great for residential, I think some of the amenities that you see that people need where they live will be added. Because right now we only have about 8,000 downtown residents. And that's really nowhere near some of the other major cities that we're trying to compete against.
You want to get it at least to 10.
Well, I actually, and we work directly with Downtown Investment Authority and Andre Wallace. He has his CRA plan, which is an amazing plan. Downtown Vision doesn't have our own plan. We work off of the city's plan and off of DIA's plan. And so I think by 2025, they want to add another 4,000 units, which is actually almost doubling the amount. And 2025 sounds like a long way away, but actually in the life of a city is actually very, very close. Like projects that are being anticipated now could be coming online right about then.
And if you had your wish list for the biggest priority in terms of a focal point project for downtown, a big attraction, what would it be? What do you see as the most important site?
You know, I think that there are a lot of amazing opportunities. And really, for us, it's more about, you know, making sure that these projects work. I think one of the challenges is that when you get these public-private partnerships, when you get an individual, you know, funding their own money. So, for example, the amphitheater. That's an individual investing in the money out by the Jaguar Stadium, the owner of the Jaguars. The city is matching that with some bed tax dollars that can only go for tourism-related. And then you have a great project. And then that's going to be, you know, managed by the Jaguars. That's a project that's set up to succeed. So many times, you know, these projects really need to succeed. You think about another public-private partnership, the water taxi, which is not really a development project, but is crucial for downtown. That's where the city helps bring in a little money. They give exclusive rights to an operator, Jack's Water River Taxi. But then the idea is it has to work. Like, people have to ride it. There has to be support from the city. There has to be support from the community. So I think whatever projects we have come online, we want to make sure that they work. Because when they don't work, it becomes a big challenge.
And if you're just tuning in, we're speaking right now with Jake Gordon, who heads up Downtown Vision, Inc. What is your vision for downtown Jacksonville? What are your thoughts and comments? As DVI releases its new State of Downtown report, the number to call in right now, 549-2937. Brad is in Jacksonville. Hey, Brad, how are you?
Hey, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. Hey, just curious about, I know you mentioned that you investigated into the pension liability, and do you worry that city leaders are just throwing money at something that they choose to fix because they're afraid to stand up for the public union and support some of the crazy benefits that they have as public employees, like retiring at the age of 30 or 8 to 40 years old and covering their medical for the rest of their life.
All right. Yeah. Okay. Thanks for the call, Brad.
That's a great question, Brad. So I think, you know, that's why I encourage everyone to educate themselves on the issue. Like the way I look at it, you can really do a referendum on how we got here in terms of the decisions that were made in the past, and that would take a really long time. I think if you look at the situation as it is now, it's incredibly pressing the amount of money the city has to set aside related to its pension liability. I'm very encouraged that Mayor Curry, in only his second year, really took this on because it really jumps out as the most pressing issue. I think that there's always this question of, you know, I trusted all these previous elected officials. Why do I trust this elected official? And, you know, I do trust the mayor. But at the same time, if you look at the issue, you realize that, you know, that something has to be done. So if it's not this solution, it's something else. The reality is it's a binary choice right now. The solution on the table is this idea of extending this existing tax and no additional tax burden. So I would, you know, we are really, if we don't do this now, there's really anxiety. You know, the mayor's mentioned becoming like Detroit. I know a lot about that situation. I mean, going into receivership as a city and having to reorganize in bankruptcy. I mean, you know, we have 25% of the state of Florida's unfunded pension liability, and then this pension liability makes up 25% of our city budget. So for every dollar, tax dollar you give to the city, they put 25 cents of that aside. So only 75 cents is going out of every dollar. So it's just an unbelievable pressing issue. Everyone is talking about the perfect solution. The reality is we had the mayor at our quarterly stakeholder meetings for Downtown Vision last week, and we asked him point blank, all of the business owners, you know, is this a solution that's going to solve the problem? And he said unequivocally yes. So in my mind, you know, I've educated myself enough, and I really believe this is the path forward, not just for downtown, but for all of Jacksonville. So the referendum is August 30th, and I highly recommend everyone get out to vote.
And if this referendum fails, let's be clear, downtown priorities, other pressing financial needs for the city would be back to square one. And Mayor Curry has talked about that quite a bit, that he sees this as a must pass. Let me ask you as a follow-up to that, Jake, because I know you very much support this, voting yes for Jacksonville. What would you say to those who, now the caller just pointed out he didn't like what he saw as being too submissive to the unions. What would you say to those who are opposed to Mayor Curry's plan? Because they say it's actually hiding the cost of government. There's been a Sheriff's Commission report on this, too, that what the city really needs to do is, yes, do the half-cent sales tax, but also raise the millage rate, raise property taxes to really adequately address these issues.
Well, number one, I don't think that, you know, that's not the solution on the table. So the referendum, if you look at it, it's a very binary choice. It's either yes on this fix or no on this fix. There's a number of reasons that the mayor has illustrated that why, you know, a millage rate. Number one is that he's only, at best case, going to be mayor for 8 years, and he really wants this to be dedicated to a specific source. And so all of these issues we're talking about are out 16 years, longer than that. So you have to think about him trusting another mayor in the future to potentially use that money to fix this issue, which if you look backwards, hasn't happened. So, you know, I do think, I really do trust this administration has looked at this problem. I mean, they want our tax dollars to go out on the street, and this is hampering the city budget related to these obligations have become huge. So the only way to do that is find another revenue source. You know, there is no ad valorem tax increase on the table. The idea that we vote for this, you know, that would be a whole separate issue later if we needed more funds. But the first thing, and that's why it's really a list of priorities, the first thing is to fix this unfunded pension liability.
And lots of calls for Jake Gordon of Downtown Vision, Inc. It's the state of downtown, a new report out this week. What are your comments right now? 549-2937. Let's go to Terry in Nocatee. Hi, Terry. How are things down your way?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
And I'm with FundForFirstKids.com, and we just talked to Jake Gordon this week. So nice, so much energy, so knowledgeable. We're glad to have him with the leader of Downtown Vision. Hi, Jake.
Hi, Terry. Thanks.
I was just going to say, from the family perspective, what we hear a lot is that families would like you know, a bit more safety in the Hemming Park area, you know, especially when kids' events are going on. Maybe something like a children's museum downtown, so it would attract families. We know everybody loves going to the library, Sweet Pea, Hemming Park events. So that would just add to it. I know there's talk about an aquarium. But additionally, some kind of transportation that would make it easy for families to get down and back. I know when we go down to FSDJ events, artist series events, it's a long trek and it's late at night. And so I don't know if a trolley or some kind of train from, you know, down south of Jacksonville, but really just making Hemming Park and downtown great for families would help too.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, Terry.
Answers off the air.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean, she mentioned a lot of things, and that's what you normally hear. There's a lot of great best practices. So number one, you know, from a clean and safe perspective, you know, Downtown Vision provides 12 clean and safe ambassadors for our downtown. So that's most of our money for our organization, which is collected through an assessment of commercial property owners, goes to these ambassadors. They wore orange. They're amazing human beings. They're down there to help you in downtown. So if there's anything you ever need. She mentioned transportation, and I think, you know, JTA just won an APTO award. You know, they, Nat Ford and their team, Brad Thoburn, have been doing amazing things in downtown. You know, the Jacksonville Regional Transportation Center is going to be right in front of the Prime Osborne. It's going to be where all the public transit, the First Coast Flyer, which is an amazing BRT, bus rapid transit, the north side. But, you know, for someone living down in Nocatee, you know, going down to Avenues Mall, that's actually going to open in December. Like this December, you're going to be able to take a bus rapid transit going all the way down to Avenues Mall. And the next one, which is going to come out next December, is to the beaches. So you talk about, you know, really excellent public transportation that makes a very few stops and gets you right into the JRTC, which is only a couple blocks from downtown. You know, those things are on the horizon. The JRTC, for example, has been thought about for 25 years, and then this year it got announced.
So, and that stands for?
Jacksonville Regional Transportation Center.
Right. And by the way, DJ tweeted you about this, how to make downtown more accessible to the beaches. DJ, that seems to be the answer.
First Coast Flyer.
Let's go to Larry in Jacksonville. Hi, Larry. Good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Yes, I was just enjoying the conversation about build up for Jacksonville downtown. I wonder if they ever considered doing something to attract the music industry in this area. The one thing that I know when it comes to family, and especially for younger people too, all love involved in music. You know, if they can encourage maybe one of the music companies or a couple of them to come to Jacksonville and set up, you know, an office here, I think they might find that they'd attract more money than they would ever imagine. Thank you.
Okay, thank you for that, Larry.
That's a great question, Larry. I mean, you know, music is obviously, you know, we feel like with a lot of our live music scene in downtown Jacksonville is one of the most robust in Jacksonville at the Elbow Entertainment District, and you can go to theelbowjacks.com. We also have the amphitheater coming online, which is really meant to compete against the St. Augustine Amphitheater for downtown and is going to be right next to the stadium. And then we have, you know, we already, you know, have amazing, like, sports and entertainment from the city of Jacksonville. Dave Harrell and Brent Fine put on the Jazz Fest, which this year was unbelievable, and that is really a great way to bring people out and to celebrate. I do think that music, you know, we do Art Walk, which is actually tomorrow, first Wednesday of every month. You know, one of the things we do is bring live music out. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's definitely something that can improve. I think there's a lot of things already going on, and I think we would love more live music venues in downtown. And anyone out there that wants to bring one, just let me know.
Lots of calls, emails, tweets, Facebook comments for Downtown Vision Inc.'s Jake Gordon. Here's a few of your social media comments, and then we'll go back to the phones. On our Facebook page, Tina writes, Jacksonville has a grocery delivery service. I work for it. I've delivered to condos on the river and downtown lofts. There are a lot of beautiful properties that I didn't even know existed. Thanks for that, Tina. And on Twitter, just a few pieces of feedback for you. You knew this was coming. People always hit you up with their ideas on this, I know.
Yeah, I love it.
Here's one from Jack. All conversations about downtown are moot until there are more people living there. From Jimmy, the biggest need for downtown right now is a new convention center. Not sexy, but necessary. And one more tweet for you. Please provide an update on the shipyards project.
Yeah, those are all great questions. So thank you for all those comments. You know, we appreciate the passion for downtown. I think that's one of the things that's made our last year so great. And I encourage you to look at our report, which is on downtownjacksonville.com, our state of downtown. I think, you know, one of the things that's really interesting from that report is all of our four major hotels downtown significantly invested in their hotel last year. The Hyatt, which is one of our biggest hotels. The
Omni, Lexington. By the way, tell them to put a rooftop bar on the Hyatt.
Yeah.
I've told them that for years, and they looked at me like I had two heads. Woods. If they put a real rooftop bar on the downtown Hyatt, I guarantee you it would take off.
I hear rooftop bars a lot. You know, we have the Cowford Chop House, which is going to have an
they're
amazing.
They're going to have one, aren't
which
they?
Which is great. See, there. And so, you know, you hear about these ideas, and it really takes someone like the Klemp family who really are investing. Like
yes.
That, you know, that's like a huge $6 million investment, which a partnership from DIA, which is going to be an amazing amenity steakhouse. And then that leveraged Bold City Brewery to open up right next door. Mm-hmm. So there are really good things happening. I think from the Hyatt perspective, their rooms are amazing. I encourage you to go in there. The Lexington, the DoubleTree rebranded.
Yeah.
So there's a lot. You know, I think a convention center would be an amazing amenity, although that is a very public purpose. You know, a lot of the convention centers are built with a little bit, mostly public dollars. So again, going back to fixing some of the systemic issues we have. And then, you know, going forward and making the right decisions. The Prime Osborne is an amazing facility, but really it's more of a civic center. You know, the Hyatt actually has more rentable space for events than the Prime Osborne does. So we definitely have some opportunity. It's great. I love the ideas. You can tweet at me or tweet here, you know.
Yeah, tweet him at Jake Gordon or tweet Downtown Vision Inc. Here's an email for Jake from David. Instead of immediately looking to increase the millage rate, how about let's stop giving developers a giant gift every time they bring additional burdens to our city services. Let them finally pay their fair share. Lots of emails and calls, and Mark is in St. Augustine. Hi, Mark.
Hey, good morning. I am kind of following up actually on one of the messages you just said from one of your people that submitted an email or something about people living down in downtown Jacksonville. If I recall correctly, several years ago, there were tax incentives that were put in place to develop or improve a couple of blocks of the Springfield area. And people came in and they made these houses beautiful. But if I understand right, they kind of had boundaries and they didn't allow that tax incentive stuff to continue out through Springfield. And I get the argument about displacing people who live down there. But the sad part of it is that until you have people who live in that area and where the city may work with companies to through tax incentives to set up a shop in the mini office building that you have downtown, then in essence, the only reason people are going to go downtown is for an event, like you mentioned, a new amphitheater, or to go downtown for a Jags game or something like that. But in St. Augustine, I don't know that I would really want to go downtown for anything unless it was just a special event. Recently, we were in Greenville, South Carolina, and every Saturday morning, they shut the streets of the main street in downtown Greenville, and they have a big farmer's market. It was beautiful, and they had improved all the buildings. They're nice lofts, and it's a very beautiful, safe place to walk around. But until you have more people living down there and working down there, then I think you're pretty much stuck with it just an event planning type scenario and trying to bring people down for a concert or a jazz fest or a football game.
Okay, yeah, thank you, Mark. And by the way, Jake, here's a tweet from Sora kind of pointing out the need to evangelize on this issue. I feel like the downtown fans need their own name, like the Beliebers or the Beehive. So maybe if you come up with that name, people can coalesce around it and address some of Mark's concerns.
Well, I think there's so many good things there. So going back, I think, you know, there's this idea of, you know, to me, everything in a downtown, the reason why I love working in downtowns is there's always best practices out there. Like, we've all been to amazing cities around the world and in this country, you know, the idea that we see them, we understand, you know, what they're doing, and everyone's doing something slightly different. So, you know, for Greenville, South Carolina, that's an amazing city and they've done a great work, but if we aggregated all the things that downtown Jacksonville has into one street like Greenville has, it would be unbelievable. And I think just like a lot of other cities, Jacksonville is a little more spread out. I did want to mention about the public-private partnership. So I'm actually on Urban Land Institute's National Council Public-Private Partnerships. And I do feel like in Jacksonville, there's a lot of confusion about this. From a real estate development perspective, you know, private money follows public money. So the idea that, and I actually talked about it with a Times Union columnist, you know, there's always this question, like, why are we paying people to be there? And the reality is that is beyond question a best practice. It's the same way when you're looking to lure in like a big company like Amazon, which is like an amazing coup for the city of Jacksonville, 1,500 jobs.
Yeah.
You're making amenities for them. Amazon can go anywhere. You have to help them solve their problems. So a lot of times this money that the city's putting aside is for the utility work that needs to be done. It's for parking, because parking, you know, from a development perspective, parking is always something that comes up in downtown development. So in any of these projects in any major city, if you look at the big projects, it's always a mixture of public and private money. Mm-hmm. It's always a public-private partnership. And, you know, the shipyards is a perfect example. Like, that's a property that, you know, there's a developer that's interested. He's interested in investing his own money, but it's a constant conversation mm-hmm. with Shad Khan, Mayor Curry, Perry and Andre Wallace related to the DIA and Sam Moose and others related to, hey, this property needs to be in a certain condition. You look at the District Jacks, which is on the South Bank, which Peter Rummel and his team is putting together an amazing thing.
That counts as downtown,
that
by the
totally
way.
Counts yeah. as downtown. It's just on the other side of the Duval County Schools building. And, you know, Peter's always done projects, you know, Amelia Island, Sawgrass, out in the middle of, you know, where there's nothing around. But this is the time he's finally doing something with all the amenities, and he doesn't have to build them all. But the thing is, you know, the reality is that, you know, those projects don't happen without a significant city investment. Like JEA had that property. They remediated that property. You know, all of the things that had to happen to make that property ready to build on had to be a city investment and a city agency investment. So you're not going to get away from the city investing in itself to make itself better. That happens in every single city. So the idea that, you know, make these developers pay for themselves, they're just going to go somewhere else. And I think, you know, so that's where, you know, it has to be the right partnership, a really smart partnership, but it does have to be public dollars, excuse me, in some of these big developments. So
your report is out, and as you look ahead to the next 18 months, what are you seeing?
Well, we're not always in the business of forecasting. I leave it. There's a lot of other smart people. I will say that we see a big upward trajectory. You know, even if you look back, I've only been here. I moved here about a year and a half ago. And in that last time, so this report really reflects my time being in Jacksonville. When I got here compared to now is almost completely different in downtown. There's Fresh Market has opened up, 220 Riverside, Unity Plaza. I mean, all of Brooklyn seems almost transformed with all of that housing over there. And I think with all of these projects on the horizon, you know, unbelievable amount of proposed projects. You know, we're going to see a whole bunch of new projects, and it's going to be amazing. I encourage people to stay optimistic, but yet patient. You know, these development projects take a long time. Calvert Chop House is a good example. Mm-hmm. I heard some people say, oh, this took forever. And it's like, really? How long did it take for someone to decide to invest in this historic building in downtown? I mean, that's amazing. That project, Jesse Ball DuPont Center, DuPont Foundation, they took the Hayden Burns Library and put $20 million into it. Mm-hmm. That's like a philanthropic gift to our downtown and to our city. They've created this amazing culture of nonprofits that's right in the middle of downtown and kind of changed that whole area. So, you know, we are excited for the future. You know, we are always available for any sort of businesses or anyone interested. We work closely with the Downtown Investment Authority. We're on all the social media as DT Jacks, and you can find us anywhere. So
that's it.
I appreciate being here.
And I appreciate you being here, too. Jake Gordon, Downtown Vision, Inc., their new report is out this week. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you very much.
And much more still ahead. Later, find out how more local school kids are going to learn robotics when they head back to class this month in Duval. But up next, changing the system to fight human trafficking, a special investigative report. Back in a moment.
As Florida school districts prepare students for success in a global knowledge-based economy, how does arts education factor into the plan? Join WJCT for Community Thread, The Politics of Arts Education, as we explore this issue and how advocates are working to ensure that diverse perspectives are represented in the development of new arts policies. Log on to wjct.org/communitythread to submit your questions or to RSVP to be a part of our studio audience on August 4th.
This program is underwritten by the Ann McDonald Baker Family Foundation.
The CEO of Angie's List made some big bets when he got the job. What's the worst that could have happened?
You know, the worst thing that could have happened, right? My nightmare would have been to drop the reviews paywall and nobody cares. And that's not at all what happened.
I'm Kai Rizdahl, rolling the company dice next time on Marketplace.
Weekday evenings at 6 on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
They come into our heads at random moments.
Murder your wife.
I'm stupid.
These dark thoughts.
The more I try to get rid of them, the more and more they'd come back.
I'm Elise Spiegel.
And I'm Lulu Miller. On the next episode of Invisibilia, we hear the story of two men overcome by their thoughts.
You will never get out. You are pathetic, powerless,
totally alone.
What to think about your own dark thoughts.
On Invisibilia.
From NPR.
Saturdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT.
on the next Fresh Air, our illogical brain and why it isn't necessarily like a computer. We talk with neuroscientist and columnist Dean Burnett, author of Idiot Brain. And we hear from comic Ali Wong, who was 7.5 months pregnant when she recorded her comedy special, which Marc Maron called the most honest, rawest, funniest special I've seen in years. Join us weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT. Your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, she was a victim of human trafficking by the time she was 15 years old. Alyssa Beck was twice held prisoner by men who forced her into prostitution, raped more times than she could count. Today, Alyssa Beck speaks on behalf of victims of trafficking and works for several local organizations trying to raise awareness about the problem. And there are deep-seated problems when it comes to the way our criminal justice system treats victims like Alyssa. We've been learning more about this in a very important and special report in the Florida Times-Union. Reporters Tessa Duvall and Larry Hannon have been covering this story and join us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here. And to our callers, what are your questions and comments about the special investigative report on human trafficking here on the First Coast? Give us a call with your thoughts and comments at 549-2937. Tessa, let's begin with you. Sadly, Alyssa Beck's story is not unusual. She had a troubled home life, got into drugs, and then the next thing she knew, someone got her hooked on drugs and forced her into prostitution.
That's right? Something that we see a lot with victims of trafficking is that their pimps and their traffickers will use drugs, sometimes even force the girls to sell drugs as a way to keep them essentially hostage to being brought into this life.
Right. And Larry, it's such a harrowing story that you have written about how she was lured into this nightmare and had such a difficult time breaking free.
Yeah. I mean, her first pimp basically got her addicted to crack cocaine, kept her locked in a hotel room without any clothes, and basically just let men come in and do what they wanted for $20 whenever they wanted. And it's just a horrible story. And to imagine that's going on still in some of the hotel rooms in Jacksonville, I just find very disturbing.
And what we've come to learn is that Florida is actually an epicenter for trafficking of young girls, but sometimes boys as well. Tessa, one of the top three states in the country.
Yes, yes. It's just behind Texas. California is far and above first in the nation. And when you have things like major highways, you have ports, you have pro sports teams, anytime you have athletic events, that's always a real draw for human trafficking.
Yeah. And let's talk a little bit about how Alyssa was able to extricate herself from this situation, because that was, reading your report, that was a really long and difficult journey for her, it sounds like.
She was locked up for almost 3 years, and as her lawyer pointed out, there's really no guardian angel in this story. Alyssa did this herself. And you know, eventually she just, while she was locked up, decided, I can't do this anymore. I don't want to be a victim. And she got off drugs, and eventually she started writing to people like the Dolores Barr Weaver Foundation, and people ended up coming to her to offer help. But it was her that really drove it, and she got herself to the point where she could get help.
And that's the point that Alyssa really wants to make, is that she felt like she was lucky, that she found the willpower and the strength within herself and got connected with the right people, and luck played a huge role. To hear her tell it, luck played a huge role in her transformation. And when she goes to Tallahassee and when she advocates for this cause, she really wants people to understand that luck shouldn't be such a big factor. You know, you shouldn't have to be lucky to escape this life to get help. We should really have a system in place that helps people and doesn't rely on them to find some kind of inner strength. Because after going through that, who can guarantee that you really have that within you? And who could blame someone?
It's a form of modern day slavery. We'll go to your calls in a moment as we look at the special report on human trafficking in Jacksonville. You can read it online at jacksonville.com. Traffickers use violence, threats, other forms of coercion to compel children into the sex trade. We want your calls at 549-2937. And so, as we learn about her story, let's talk about the Dolores Barr Weaver Policy Center and other advocacy groups that are trying to basically reform the criminal justice system when it comes to how young girls and young women are treated. there's still a lot of work to be done, we're learning, when it comes to how the system treats these victims. They are victims, but yet they're often treated like criminals. Isn't that right?
And oftentimes they do find themselves with criminal charges, but you have to think about, first of all, the trauma that they've been through. I mean, that plays a significant role in the lives of many children who are involved in the juvenile justice system. When you've been through something like that and you don't receive, you know, the counseling or the substance abuse treatment that you may need, of course, you're going to act out. Mm-hmm. But also, let's remember that their pimps often force them to steal drugs. They put them in unsafe situations, or I'm sorry, sell drugs, you know, steal food, things like this. They put them in these situations where they really have no choice but to find themselves in the juvenile justice system. And mm-hmm. so the public defenders often try to find safe house placements for them, but many times for these girls, it's not their first brush with the law. So
right.
simply probation and community services aren't always options on the table, unfortunately.
And I also think we have to realize that there's what we think of, you know, we think of movies like Pretty Women or Taken. They're entertaining movies, but they're not the reality. First off, these girls are so much younger than what we see on TV. I mean, Alyssa's 21 and she still looks like a teenager. And when she was 15, as one U.S. attorney told me, there was no doubt this was a 15-year-old girl if you looked at her. And
what about the initial decision that the state attorney's office made to charge her as an adult? Can you talk about that? Because she, let's explain what led to that.
Yes. So when Alyssa escaped from her second trafficker, she fled. She left all of her belongings behind. And with some friends, there are different sides to the story, but the gist is Alyssa wanted to go back to her home, to that home, and to get the things that she left behind. And it ended up being an attack on her second trafficker. And Alyssa and her co-defendants ended up with several felony charges. And Alyssa, I think, some kidnapping charges,
carjacking,
yeah. Several felony charges. And so I talked to an assistant state attorney last week who said the decision to charge her as an adult came from the very serious nature of the charges. And he also said that she was really the one who helped to orchestrate that event of that day.
And in defense of the state attorney's office, this was a serious crime.
Yes.
I mean, a child was bound and gagged. You know, someone was held at gunpoint and forced into the yeah. trunk of a car. But I think I can speak for Tessa when I say this. One thing we were struck by looking at the records of everything that had happened is that very rarely did anyone seem to realize what Alyssa had been through, whether it was juvenile justice or the sheriff's office or the state attorney's office throughout this whole ordeal. Very rarely in any of the reports did they really discuss the trauma that Alyssa had been through.
And it's the work of organizations like Rethreaded and Dolores Barr Weaver Center that's trying to educate the whole system about that. In the end, she was sentenced to time served and probation. Judge Mallory Cooper made that decision.
Right. Although she'd been in jail for over 1,000 days when that happened. So really, it was a 3 to 4 year sentence. It was just retroactive.
Let's go to Christina in San Marco. Hi, Christina. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I was calling. I'm a social worker, actually, here in Jacksonville. I'm specially trained to work with girls that are victims of human trafficking. And I can say that one of the difficulties that I see is that many of these girls, they experience some type of trauma in their childhood, and that will cause them to run away from the home, whether it's domestic violence or drug use within the parents. And a lot of times that I find when the parents do contact JSO, there's not much that they can do except file a missing persons report. And then even when we get involved, you know, we try to do some type of services to keep the girls from running away, but we find that they're very indoctrinated from what they've learned in the streets. And with the passing of the Safe Harbor Act in 2012, that's where, you know, they can go a place of refuge for them to get services if they have any mental health or substance abuse issues that need to be addressed. But the one flaw that I find in that is that the children, the girls or boys, the victims of the human trafficking, they have to agree to go to the safe harbors. So if we can't get them to agree because they're so under the spell, I guess, of the pimp, then, you know, they can't get the services that they truly need.
Yeah. Christina, thanks so much for pointing that out.
And that's something we heard a lot from the sheriff's office and the FBI is that oftentimes these girls get arrested, and the moment they make bail, they're back with their pimp because they believe their pimp loves them. A lot of them come from abusive homes. Sending them back to their parents is not always the option.
And this is where advocates say that the Open Doors Network comes in, which is a new system of care model that's been funded through the state legislature for the first time this year. It's hoping to be implemented fully or as a pilot project within the fiscal year. But it will have a survivor mentor who is one of the first responders. And so the hope is that by responding to these girls with someone who has been through something similar, that it builds trust and that with that trust, they're less likely to run away.
It's important reporting, and I encourage everyone to check it out online at jacksonville.com or in your print copy of the Florida Times Union on human trafficking in this area. Reporters Tessa Duval and Larry Hannon, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
We'll be right back.
Gary Snook lives in Montana with excruciating pain.
It's like being boiled in oil 24 hours a day.
His only relief comes from opioid medication, but he leaves his state to get a prescription.
They may be in pain for the rest of their life, so how do we treat them without actually harming them?
The dilemma of prescribing opioids in Montana later on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Calling all educators, WJCT and Community First are proud to present the 4th Annual Teach Conference, an event created by teachers to engage, empower, and inspire teachers. Saturday, October 8th at the Hyatt Regency Riverfront Hotel. Tickets are only $30. Spend the day sharing ideas with colleagues, learning new ways to engage students, and empowering yourself to inspire others. Bring a friend and get your tickets now. WJCT.org/teach.
Sam Brody gets why so many people are moving to the Houston metro area.
You move to this area and you're like, cool, I have a water view. This is a great place to be.
Plus, good jobs, great schools. But there's a catch.
The last thing you think about is 20 feet of water coming up here.
On the next Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.
Thursday at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Hi, I'm Steve Woodard, the Director of Emergency Preparedness for the City of Jacksonville. Knowing your evacuation zone is critical to your safety. Listen to emergency management for important evacuation information. Stay informed at jacksready.com and tune to 89.9, the designated emergency broadcaster for Northeast Florida.
This segment is brought to you by Colo CSX Data Center Hosting Solutions.
Welcome back. Well, finally, this hour, before you know it, school is starting up again in Duval County, the kids going back to class on August 15th. Now, this year, more of them are going to be studying a rapidly growing field, robotics. The nonprofit Renaissance Jax has just received an increase in funding from Duval County Public Schools, and they're going to expand robotics programs into all public middle schools. How's this going to work? With more, we welcome Andy Maluzzi, a senior mentor for FIRST Robotics. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
This is really cool stuff, and I think so many kids are going to be so excited about this. Can you tell us about this program?
Yeah, so FIRST stands for Inspiration Recognition of Science and Technology. It's a nonprofit based out of Manchester, New Hampshire, that has hundreds of thousands of students involved nationwide. That build robots. And I'm talking autonomous robots that actually compete.
They do stuff.
Yeah, it's really cool. And you see a middle school student build one, and it's a really cool experience.
And so this is a program that kids in every public middle school will be eligible to take as an elective. Is that how it will work?
Yeah, so a couple of years ago, the STEM Hub and Renaissance Jax here in Jacksonville sort of teamed up and started this initiative. And last year, we had 36 schools in Duval County, and this year we're growing up to 50 schools really increasing and providing an opportunity for every middle school student to get involved with robotics.
This is a way to get kids into science, and as you said, STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. It brings them in a way that is very exciting, I think, and accessible instead of turning them off to those types of academic disciplines, because they're making something with their hands, they see the result. It's got to be a really transformative experience for a lot of children, I would think.
FIRST Robotics is unique in that it takes sort of the traditional STEM education and turns it into a sport. And it's one of those sports where every kid can go pro. Mm-hmm. So they build with Lego blocks, what they're very, very familiar with. They get to program a robot and actually see it do something and then compete and work with their friends, which is really cool.
What kinds of things do they program them to do?
So every year there's a challenge. Actually, the kits just started coming out. I've seen them popping up all over social media as teams been getting them. This year's theme is animal-based. And they will have different challenges on a 4x8 board with different Lego obstacles that they need to interact with. They need to pick something up or move around.
They're made with Legos. And they had a demonstration of this recently. I was privileged to attend at UNF. And when you watch the robots kind of go into this little arena and compete, it's pretty amazing stuff.
Yeah, I mean, for what these middle school students can do, it's really phenomenal. And then to see sort of the whole area really take a big focus on this is phenomenal. If you ever go over to Mark's shop at Renaissance Jack's, you'll see a whole bunch of Lego kits, and you'll see usually kids really involved, which is phenomenal.
And this is indicative of the growth of robotics generally all over the country. When you look at this, you see people envisioning every home having its own robot. And is that pie in the sky, or is that something that you see as possible in the future?
I mean, we've seen it with like the Roombas in everyone's house, and more things are becoming automated. So it's definitely something that is a growing field, and we need more students with those skills.
Now, and of course, more automation has positives and negatives. It creates new industries, but it also makes obsolete other industries. So it's not a win-win all across the board in terms of the economy. What would you say to those who are, they're kind of threatened or nervous about seeing more things being handed over to automation or to a robot, when in the past a human being might have done that work?
Well, one of the interesting things is that as we start to grow in this sort of automation field, it really provides a new opportunity for those people that were doing those sort of skills to become the operators for those machines, and really sort of move up and get more training within the company and offer professional development. Uh-huh. So it can really be a positive in that direction as well. And by starting students at a young age with these sorts of skills, it really provides a great community resource in terms of both offering that training as well as those potential engineers and operators.
And as we said a moment ago, the Duval County Public School Board last month voted to expand FIRST Lego League teams to all middle schools in Jacksonville. That is an increase from 36 schools to more than 50 schools. This is all to promote science education. There are going to be nearly 2,000 students across 20 counties, meanwhile, that are working with Renaissance Jacks on robotic competition. So there are so many opportunities for kids. If a mom or dad is listening right now to this and they want to enroll their child in robotics in middle school this fall, is it too late? How can they be part of this?
So now is actually the perfect time. The season kicks off actually later in August officially. They'll release the challenge and all that. So you're right at the perfect time. And in the next a couple weeks, there will be training offered. So you can check out rjacks.org for that sort of information.
What's the website?
rjacks.org.
The letter R,
JAX.org.
Easy to remember.
Yep. And there will be teacher trainings offering professional development, as well as we'll be offering trainings for, community teams as well, so they can get the skills required before season starts.
It's science education for kids, middle school kids. It's fun. It's competitive. And they are setting the goal of training the next generation of American scientists, engineers, and skilled laborers all through robotics this fall in the Duval County Public Schools. Pretty cool stuff. Andy Maluzzi, Senior Mentor for FIRST Robotics. And again, that website is rjacks.org. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.
And that's our show today. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme is composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Chevchik. Never miss a show. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes and Stitcher, and video on demand. Check out those segments online at TVJax.com. Next on Diane Rehm, federal courts deal blows to voter restrictions in North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Kansas. But on the local level, some say minority voters still face intimidation in certain states. The latest on voter access across the U.S. ahead of the general election. That's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.